Hosea this morning. So if you have Bibles, turn to Hosea chapter 1. Now, preachers often like to use illustrations to help people understand and remember what they are saying. And I'm going to be honest with you, I had real difficulty trying to think of some punchy opener to share with you today. And I think that part of the problem that I had was that the book of Hosea, God asks Hosea not to use powerful illustrations to show his message, but instead he told Hosea to be the illustration of God's message. And if you know anything about the book of Hosea, you'll know that it is a pretty extreme illustration at that. To give you a quick overview of the whole story before we delve into what the book of Hosea has to say to us today, God asked Hosea to marry a prostitute who by her unfaithfulness to him would represent the Israelites' unfaithfulness to God. Hosea's message, illustrated by his marriage to his unfaithful wife, challenged the Israelites to stop acting like prostitutes, being disloyal to God, and chasing after other gods. Got it? Perhaps a couple of verses from Hosea chapter 6 best captures the message. Here, Israel's faithfulness is compared to the morning mist, like the dew that goes away early in the day. They hang around for a bit, but they disappear. And the plea from a heartbroken God who's devastated by the adultery committed by his people says in Hosea 6, verse 6, I want faithful love more than I want animal sacrifices. I want people to know me more than I want burnt offerings. It's a beautifully poetic book, and it doesn't take very long to read at all. In fact, each of the minor prophets that we're going to be looking at are all quite short books. And they're going to be short enough for you to go away and read in 15, 20 minutes in the afternoon after each service. As I said, we're going to be in the text a lot today, so if you have Bibles, then it would be good to turn to the book of Hosea now. Our reading comes from Hosea chapter 1, and starting at verse 2, and I'd like to invite Richard to come forward to share it with us.
Those who've got the church Bibles is on page 855. So Hosea chapter 1, verses 2 to 9. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. So he married Gomer's daughter of Debalim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said to Hosea, call him Jezreel, because I will soon punish the house of Jehu for the massacre at Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of Israel. In that day I will break Israel's bow in the valley of Jezreel. Gomer conceived again and gave birth to a daughter. Then the Lord said to Hosea, call her Lo-Ruhamah, for which means not loved. For I will no longer show love to the house of Israel, that I should at all forgive them. Yet I will show love to the house of Judah, and I will save them, not by bow, sword, or battle, or by horses and horsemen, but by their Lord, their God. After she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, Gomer had another son. Then the Lord said, call him Lo-Ammi, which means not my people. For you are not my people, and I am not your God. The Lord blesses the reading.
Now don't for one second be confused. Hosea knew exactly what kind of marriage he was getting himself into. He knew from the beginning it was going to be filled with unfaithfulness. However, this is part of what makes Hosea's story so beautiful. Hosea followed everything that the Lord said to the letter. And our passage there said that he was to take in and embrace a wife who he knew was a promiscuous woman. And to show a promiscuity, the text leaves open the question of Hosea's second and third children. Concerning Lo Ruhamah and Lo Ammi, the text says that Gomer conceived and bore a son and daughter. This could mean that the second and third children might well have been Hosea's illegitimate children. The truth is that we don't actually know, but it's more than a possibility. And I'm afraid that I can't gloss over the names of the children at this point. Can you imagine being called what Hosea's children were called? There have been lots of new babies in church recently. Names are so important. And it's always a really exciting moment to hear what the name of a baby is. Oh, look at these cute kids. What are their names? Well, this is Jezreel, for where Jehu massacred the whole city. This one's not loved. And this little guy here, not my people. In this day and age, I think both child and social services would have some major issues with you calling your children those names. And I know that it's being dramatic to show the Israelites how God feels. And I know that it's also a reminder to Hosea daily of how God feels. But come on, imagine being called not loved for the rest of your life. Anyway, back to the story. God called Hosea to marry Gomer to demonstrate the intensely personal relationship that he desires with his people, as well as how painful and sacrificial that relationship has always been for him. God is our faithful partner. And if Hosea, a human, could show this kind of love and faithfulness to his wife while knowing her pattern of unlawful behavior, then how much more must God love his people? The minor prophets show us God's passion for humanity, and it shows how much it hurts him when people walk away from him. God, in his perfect love, not only pursued us in the midst of our unfaithfulness, but he promises his love to us forever. We're starting to begin to see the deeper meaning of the story of Hosea. It's not the promise that he made to the Israelites. It's not just that promise. It's God's promise for all his people, for me, for you, and for everyone. Just as Hosea was called to continue to pursue and love his unfaithful wife, God too has committed himself to his unfaithful people, just like me and just like you. Chapter 2, which you can look at after this morning's service, begins to talk about God's pursuit of us. It doesn't gloss over the fact that humanity faces repercussions for when it's done wrong. We only have to look around us to see all the pain and hurting in the world. But verse 14 says this, and it's going to come up on the screens. Therefore, I am now going to allure her. I will lead her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. There I will give her back her vineyards and will make the valley of Achor a door of hope. There she will respond as in the days of her youth, as in the day she came up out of Egypt. In that day, declares the Lord, you will call me my husband. You will no longer call me my master. God is going to allure her. God is going to attract his people back to him. Instead of sitting back and saying, well, this is her fault, let her rot, or let her come crawling back to me later, God says, no, I'm going to go and pursue my people. I'm going to go after them. God's love involves a willing pursuit and ultimately a necessary sacrifice for the sake of the one being loved. How many times when you've been in need has God responded in a remarkable way? God is the one who does the pursuing. God is leading us, he's taking and he's giving. And when we see the goodness of God, what are God's people to do? Verse 16 or 15 says, respond. That's it. It says respond as in the days of her youth. This is a nod towards the initial response when the Israelites first had when they were leaving Egypt, the absolutely unwavering trust that they put in God's plan as they followed Moses. But Hosea knew that God would be faithful to his people if they simply responded to his rescue plan. And so we come on to chapter 3. What I believe to be one of the most powerful chapters in all of the Old Testament. Hosea chapter 3, verse 1. The Lord said to me, go, Show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes. Gomer has left Hosea. We don't know exactly why she's left or when she has left, or if this was the first time she'd left, or maybe this was part of an ongoing pattern for her. Maybe Gomer, like so many of us in our relationship with God, would commit herself to Hosea, only to be lured away to her old life of sin and unfaithfulness. Here, Hosea is directed to love, even when it must have been so hard to love her. Modern society shows images of people falling in and out of love like you can just flick a simple switch. We see love as an emotion that can disappear easily in this day and age. But Hosea and Gomer's relationship is a living testimony of God's willingness to love us and never, ever give up on us. Perhaps I'm pinning this all on Gomer, that it's her fault, but maybe she could never fully believe Hosea when Hosea said to her, "I love you." Maybe she just simply couldn't believe that Hosea's love was as true, faithful, and sacrificial as it first seemed. Maybe she was always waiting for Hosea to drop the ball or wise up and realize the kind of woman that he'd married. And she decided that she was just going to run away from it all. In any case, Gomer found herself away from her husband, and even worse, she was bound in slavery. How do we know she's enslaved? Well, verse 2 says, "So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethek of barley." Hosea, this beautiful symbol of God, purchases what is already his. Is this starting to sound a bit familiar? Can you see this story unfolding before you? "Then I told her, 'You are to live with me for many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I will behave the same way toward you. For the Israelites will live for many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred stones, without ephod or household gods.'" Hosea takes Gomer to safety so that he can sanctify her, which, as the kids who are in Sol Patrol would tell you, means to set her apart. Hosea wants to set Gomer apart, make her right, and prepare her for what would surely be a heavenly wedding once again. He told her to live with him for many days so that they could redevelop their relationship together. And in verse 4, Hosea extends the reality that we know to be talking to us today to a prophecy about Israel. Hosea explains that this is the right way to worship. To live for many days, they must respond to God's pursuit of them by not following the king or prince, by not following the sacrifice or distractions of the world, without ephod or household gods, without worshipping fake gods and the things of the world. I think we all know what this is talking about, and we all know exactly what it means in our own personal situations, the things that we follow that distract us from God. And in verse 5, "Afterward, the Israelites will return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. They will come trembling to the Lord and to his blessings in the last day." Now, as I come into land, I want to share with you a video. Well, it's actually part of a sermon that I heard whilst preparing for this morning's talk. I've just glossed over these verses, but I really do believe they are some of the most important verses in the Old Testament. The awe of the Lord is shown beautifully in this video. It explains it in a better way than I ever could, and I simply couldn't not show it to you this morning. So take a look at the screens.
"Then the Lord said to me, 'Go again, Hosea.'" What? "Go find her. Love this woman who's loved by a lover. and is right now committing adultery. Go find her, Hosea. Go find her. Look what's after the comma. Just like the love of the Lord for Israel. I love her. Now, where it says Israel, it means Israel, but it also prophetically speaks of God's love for the whole world. Go find her again. This is like my love for the children of Israel who look to other gods and love the raisin cakes of the pagans. In other words, they like the things that society, stuff, possessions that the world offers. They're trying to find love and meaning and purpose in that. Go find her. Boy, that must have been a heart-wrenching process. As you go looking for your wife who was a former prostitute, who's now back into prostitution, where do you go looking for her, friends? How messy is that search? How painful is that pursuit? As he walks the streets, everyone says you don't go to those neighborhoods. Men of God should never be seen in those places and buildings. But here's Hosea. Looking for who? His wife, of all people. Going on in verse 2, he continues to write, "So I bought her. I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and 1.5 homers of barley." Wait. She's your wife, Hosea. She's already yours. What was the scene like as Gomer's back in the sex slave industry? What are the chances? Does Gomer find her on some pedestal somewhere, chained and shackled, naked, being sold to the highest bidder? Hosea there sees his wife, the mother of their three children, and Hosea looks at her and says, "Excuse me, sir, that's my wife." He goes, "Sir, I don't care who you think she is. This is her price." But I... What's the price? And he pays for what is already his. The Bible says, I hope you understand, Hosea is a picture of God, and no offense, you and I are a picture of Gomer. The Bible says the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Mankind is the unique possession of the Creator God. And yet, 2,000 years ago, he paid a dear price. He paid for what he already possessed. And he sent his son, who spilled his blood, to purchase back what he already owned. How much? Hosea gets the money. What was that exchange like when Hosea looked in the eyes of his wife? No doubt she hung her head in embarrassment. "He's found me. I've abandoned him. I've abandoned our three kids. And yet he insists on buying me. Buying me. These other men sought to buy her, to use her. Hosea seeks to buy her, to heal her." It says in verse 4, "For the children of Israel shall abide." Now this is where Hosea shifts in and he starts speaking prophetically. This is really no longer about him and Gomer. It's about something that is to come. It's about something bigger. Verse 5. Afterward, there's going to come a season. He didn't know it would be 750 years, but it would. There'd be no king. It would be difficult. It would be unclear. It would be challenging. "But then the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God. And David their king." And then notice what it says. "They shall fear the Lord." Now, Israel and Judah knew what it was to fear the Lord. And by fear, I mean terror. Under the old system of relating to God, there was terror. Terror. Because God, they were unable to keep his commands, the Ten Commandments, and there was judgment and there was wrath. "But there will come a day," he prophesies. "There will come a Messiah and he will finally satisfy and appease the wrath of God. And the fear of the Lord in those days will be in awe of his goodness in the latter days. The fear of the people will not be of terror. It will be in awe of his graciousness towards humanity. Hosea just bought Gomer, even though she was already his. This is the picture of the gospel. Salvation completes the work in spite of her sins, in spite of her doings, in spite of running away. And then he stands and says, and there will come a day, a King David will rise. And in those days, they will fear his goodness. These are the days that we live in. Our Hosea has come. Salvation has come. And he found you, and he found me, and he had to walk to the most despicable places, and he had to communicate and be around sinful, broken humanity. Don't you see? As Hosea searched for his wife, so Jesus came searching for the salvation of humanity. And by the way, when God found you, you were not so neat and nice and put together. You were in chains, and you were naked, and you were sinful, and so was I. And our gracious God said, how much? How much? The blood of your son. For then and only then can they, humanity, avert the wrath and justice that is rightfully on their heads. Very well. Very well. I'll send my son.
If we can have the last few slides up. We see different characters here. We see Hosea, the abandoned, faithful husband who has every right to turn his back on Gomer. We see the unfaithful wife, the abandoner who is powerless to affect her situation. Then the husband in love pays the price for the freedom of the one he loves. Gomer wasn't just gone, she was enslaved. Because of her lifestyle and the choices she made, she'd become trapped and powerless to change her own circumstances. She was at the mercy of others. We're trapped in slavery to sin. Like Gomer, we're unable to change our circumstances. We're stuck in our lives of sin, and whilst we might think we're nothing like Gomer, deep down, we are just as human as she was. Hosea had every right to leave his wife to what she deserved, but he didn't. God commanded him to go to her because there was no way that she could come to him, even if she wanted to. God came to us because there was no way that we could have got to him on our own. Hosea didn't buy back Gomer on emotion or sentiment or good intentions. He didn't stand at a distance and shout about his love for her. Instead, he recognized that freedom doesn't come cheaply. He went with his pockets full in order to pay the price so that the one he loved could go free. Jesus did that for us. In order for Hosea to cover Gomer's shame, he must first place the winning bid for his wife. An amount that was equal to 30 pieces of silver. Half in silver, 15 shekels, and half in barley. This isn't merely a picture of God's love or God's plan. This is total prophecy. When Jesus came to pay the price to buy us, to redeem us from this slave market of sin, to clothe our shame with his perfect righteousness, he was the one who was sold for 30 pieces of silver. This is a story of redemption. We belonged to God in the first place. We have always belonged to God. But we were the ones that ran from him. He is the one who brought us back. He is the one who redeemed us. When we're feeling alone and like God has abandoned us, he's going to find us. He's going to comfort us, and he's going to bring us home just like Hosea did to Gomer. When we run from him into our old ways of life, he's going to chase us, and he's going to show his goodness to us, and he's going to love us all the more, just like Hosea did to Gomer. And when we want nothing to do with God because we're mad at him for whatever reason, God is never going to give up on you. You are his special creation, whom he loves so very, very much. The story of Hosea tells us just how loved we really are. That God sent his own son to pay the ultimate price so that we can know him fully. So stop fighting his pursuit of you. I know some people here are fighting God this morning, and I want to encourage you to come back to him. Don't take as long as Gomer did. Don't be as stubborn as Gomer was. Trust that the Lord, who has been chasing you all your life, really does want to know you and love you today. Stop running. And for those of you who've accepted Christ's free gift, the challenge today is this: are you living a life that says thank you to God for this sacrifice that he has made? Are you being faithful to him? And are you being obedient to his call? Are you being obedient to the one who paid the ultimate price for you? Let's pray.